No Direction and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Okay, welcome to the Starfinder Adventure Path Q&A panel. That's us, and that's what we're here for. I'm Rob McCrary, the creative director for Starfinder.
I'm Chris Sims. I'm a developer on Starfinder.
And I'm Jason Keeley, also a developer on Starfinder.
And particularly the AP for these guys.
Yes,
so we always usually at these panels we mention that there will be spoilers because we're talking about the adventure paths. So if there's questions about stuff, we'll talk about that. So if you're a player in adventure path, maybe you know, put your fingers in your ears or something. I don't know. We'll talk about some of what our upcoming stuff is, and then we'll open it up to questions and just kind of have a chat. So we're celebrating Starfinder's first anniversary this year at Gen Con. It came out, yeah. Which also means because our first adventure path, Dead Sons, was originally a bi-monthly release. So it was one every 2 months. So we just released the final volume of that. So Dead Sons is the first Starfinder adventure path. There's 6 volumes, takes you up to level 12 or 13.
You're 13 when 13. It's over.
And this is sort of an introductory adventure path to all of Starfinder. It starts on Absalom Station, which is sort of the center of our setting. It then expands outward to go to a few other planets and stuff within the Pact Worlds, and then it goes even farther out. So kind of explore the whole galaxy, and there's starship combat and all sorts of aliens to fight and meet and talk about. So that one is just finished now. The 6th volume just released. So that whole adventure path is ready to go.
And you can get the pawns also at the store?
Yeah, we have the pawns. So to give you all of the aliens you need to run that adventure path. Also, there's the flip mat of the Sunrise Maiden that just came out as well. This is the starship. At the end of the first adventure, the characters get their first starship that they then get to customize and use for the rest of the campaign. And so there's a flip mat that has a map of the ship so they can kind of, you know, use that in play. And then the other side is sort of like the exterior of the ship inside a docking bay. So that works well with it. So that's Dead Sons. And I guess we can start talking about our next adventure path.
Yeah, there it is. There's the cover for Against the Aeon Throne, first volume. So Against the Aeon Throne is, we're starting out this month-ish, and we are doing something a little experimental with this. This is only going to be a 3-volume adventure path, but it is coming out monthly. So by the time you roll around to your Thanksgiving dinner, you will have all 3 of these volumes. And this is the first one, The Reach of Empire, written by our now very own Ron Lundeen. This starts off at first level, takes place in a Pact Worlds, colony worlds in the vast that is being occupied by the Aslanti Star Empire. Now, the Aslanti Star Empire is sort of our evil empire expansionist adversary they're basically descended from the Aslantis who blasted off into space in Galarian's distant past. And now they are awful and evil, and they are doing something on this colony world, and they kidnap a friend of yours. So as we move on to the next volume, Escape from the Prison Moon, here's the cover of that, also by one of our very own, Eleanor Farron. This is the Sedona. This is Android mystic that they have that is a friend of yours. This is something that you create as when you create your first level characters, you'll create a connection to her, so you'll want to rescue her. She's been taken to a Aslanti prison moon, and through subterfuge and lasers, you will have to rescue her and bring her basically back to sort of semi-civilized space. So you'll have a nice little home base at this point and a remote outpost that's just on the fringes of the Aslanti Star Empire, full of lots of fun, weird aliens, and it's got a whole sort of scum and villainy kind of vibe to it. She's going to let you know that the Aslanti Star Empire have taken something from that colony world, which is an ancient artifact known as the Rune Drive, which uses the power of an Aeon Stone to maybe do star travel better than the Drift. So there's no way we can allow our our evil empire to have that. So in the final volume, of, which I think we have right here, The Rune Drive Gambit by Larry Wilhelm. You've got to go to this gentleman here, Sardad Zolan Ulvestra, who is our big bad. He is a sort of a high-ish ranking Aslanti noble, and as you can see by the look on his face, he hates you. Especially with all the trouble you've caused him at this point. He's the one who discovered the drive, and he's taking it back to a sort of his own asteroid science base to figure out how it works before he's taken it to the full Star Empire, because he's done some stuff that is not quite legal for the Star Empire, not quite kosher for how they usually do things. So he's worried he's going to get in trouble. So, but if you get on this asteroid, you can steal the drive from him and basically make it render it unusable for anyone, so that and bring the remains back to Pack World so the stewards can examine it. Should mention the previous adventure goes from 3 to 4. This will go from 5 to 6. You'll at the end of the adventure you'll be level 7.
But wait. Can I say one thing?
Yes.
So just one thing about the Aslanti Star Empire is they're one of the sort of big threats of the setting. So whereas Dead Sun starts off very focused in the Pact Worlds and then takes about, this one is really set out in the vast,
yes,
and everything, and kind
100%.
Of giving you the first taste of what happens when you're not in the big civilized Pact Worlds, which is our core setting, and
yeah,
you get to run into one of our big bads of the game, which is the Aslanti Star Empire.
These three volumes have a lot of information about the Aslanti Star Empire, the 17 sentient and sapient races that they have conquered.
Officially recognized.
And that they're officially, yeah, they might even more
some
than,
some are not officially
some
recognized.
Are not, yes, they, oh, as Aslanti Star Empire don't think androids are people. It's another reason why they're jerks. But there's a bunch of those. There'll be some new actually playable races in that particular thing. So you can be a kind of a monkey person, or a walking around sea anemone, or a tiny cuttlefish in a big psychic bubble. Lots of fun stuff in there. That's in the second volume. The third volume, besides our normal continuing the campaign, we have a nice juicy article about the stewards. So it's got some stewards, new stewards, archetypes, and stuff like that, so you can figure out what this. And in case you don't know, the stewards are sort of the Pack World's diplomatic police force in a lot of ways. They make sure that the Pack Worlds get along and play nice with one another, and then occasionally sort of look outwards and for threats against the Pack Worlds, such as the Aslanti Star Empire. There will be a separate pawn set for this that will come out January-ish, February-ish. It'll be a little thinner than our normal Adventure Path pawn sets, but you'll have it before the next three finish, basically. Well, around when the next three finish, but much sooner than you would if you had to wait for a sixth volume. So, and that'll have all the tons of Aeon Guards and other Aslanti baddies in it.
We also put a little Easter egg in Dead Suns, because at one point you're traveling through the Drift and you run into an Aslanti starship, and that's kind of a little premonition of this adventure path, so that's a spoiler. But you know, if you see that, that's because we have some new Aslanti starships.
In the first volume, there's some new Aslanti starships that you use throughout the AP. And I believe, what is that other article in the first volume? Aslanti starships, and then it's a more gazetteer about the colony, this colony called Nacondas, and maybe a little tiny little plot seeds if you want to stay on this mist shrouded forest world. Great. So once you finish this, and here's the fun part, we're going to move on to another three-parter that you can play directly after this one, because it starts, this is another experimental thing we're doing, it starts at level 7. We've announced this, but this particular adventure path is known as the Signal of Screams. This is our space horror adventure path, and here's cover for number 1. This is, of course, written by our very own Chris S. Sims. And it's called the Diaspora Strain. In the Signal of Screams Adventure Path, you start off by getting invited to this sort of soft reopening of this luxury asteroid resort in the Diaspora. You get there, and there's some little skirmish beforehand, that maybe sort of like some pirates maybe trying to steal all the rich people's money. But it's not until you've landed and sort of been there for a couple days, maybe relaxing, enjoying the amenities, some spas, some shopping, some delicious cuisine, when things start to go a little weird. Your players are going to start seeing things. The other guests are going to start getting a little agitated at one another. They're going to maybe even lash out at one another, and the PCs will probably want to, like, you know, they'll be there when it happens, so they'll have a chance to, like, calm things down. Basically, everyone starts to go just a teeny bit mad until some people start dying. It becomes a whole, what's the word, bloodbath. at the end, right?
So this is a comedy campaign.
This is the comedy campaign, exactly. No, it's a lot of terrible, horrible things. You'll learn that the asteroid that this resort was built on has some old mining tunnels underneath it, and maybe that's where all this creepy crawliness is coming from. There's a lot of ties to the Shadow Plane in here, some other spooky beings kind of lurking all around the edges. And when you come back up from those, when you find out, when your PCs find out that that was a red herring sending you down in the mines, we said there would be spoilers. You come back up to the surface, and everything the guests have been murdering one another, gouging their own eyes out, all sorts of event horizon nastiness. And you'll see here on the cover here, this is Yazaloya. She is a champion of the sport of Brutaris. Which is something we sort of hinted at in the core rule book. We don't know exactly what it is. It's kind of a gladiator-type punch-em-up sport. And she is sort of like got this sort of spooky chain at the end of it. So she comes up the big bad. She's gone the most mad, it's terrifying to have to fight her. And then do the PC escape. But as they escape, maybe they realize something's not quite right in their own brains. Maybe they've succumbed a bit to this tiny seeds of corruption that's gnawing in the back of their heads, and they've got to figure out what's going on. So they're going to move, and this goes from level 7 to 8. It's got, in the back here, sort of rules for those corruptions, and then a nice article about running horror campaigns in the Starfinder universe, and in general for the most part, written by Epidai Ravishal, the creator of Dread, and that is a good role-playing game if you haven't played it, a good horror role-playing game specifically, and I think that's a pretty big get to get him to write something for us, and a bunch of spooky monsters, obviously. But they're going to move on from this. With the tiny clues that they have, they're going to head to the planet of Verses. We don't have a sketch. Do you have a sketch for this one? Yeah. They're going to head to the planet of Verses to find this evil corporation that sort of may be partially responsible for all the madness, a corporation known as Eclipse Innovations. And this gentleman here, this Verthani gentleman here, is Kaon Rees, who is a sort of executive vice president in charge of badness and evil schemes. And you're going to find out that they have done terrible things to their own employees. You're going to land on this large city, and that they are in the process of beaming out this corrupting signal to a city at large. So, and this particular city is actually home to the Assembly of Nations, which is the Verses Ring of Nations, sort of UN. So this has worldwide possible, even galaxy-wide ramifications if the PCs don't stop it. Eventually they get to Eclipse's sort of secret black site underneath some ice out on the Verses dark side. The Verses being our tidally locked planet. One side's very hot, one side's very cool. The middle ring is sort of very much in dusk. So this has sort of got some, again, this sort of shadowy ties. That's a theme that runs through this. And once they have discovered, you have a question?
What did you say the name of the corporation was?
Eclipse Innovations is the name of the corporation. And they are releasing something called the Penumbra Protocol, which advertised everywhere throughout Kuvakara as sort of this social media solution, and you can tag all your friends in it and post pictures and reviews and whatnot, but it's literally driving people insane, causing them to wrap chains around themselves and gouge their eyes out and all sorts of fun stuff.
There's no social commentary there.
There's no social commentary there. Unfortunately, Kaon doesn't have all the answers because he's not the big bad in charge here. Once they have defeated Kaon, they're going to stumble out of the black site and realize that they've actually been transported directly to the Shadow Plane, which is where I didn't mention who that. Penumbra Protocol here is the name of the second adventure, and that is by Jenny Jarzabski, who's done some excellent Starfinder Society scenarios. So we sort of gave her this adventure. She knocked it out of the park. I don't know if we have a sketch for the next one, but the final volume of Signal of Screams, which goes from levels 11 to 12. No, we don't. that's fair. We're still working on that one. Is called Heart of Night, and that is by a sort of newcomer, Saif Ansari. And he sort of brings it out to, you're on the Shadow Plane. On Verses, you've got to get a shadow version of your ship, and they're basically worshippers of Zonkuthon there that you kind of have to work with, and maybe... If you want, you can get a blessing from Zonkuthon, but it's probably not the best idea. And once you've gotten there, you've got to fly back to basically the shadow version of the resort, which, to take the title of the adventure very seriously, is actually now encased in this sort of actual physical beating heart floating in the asteroid. And you've got to get in there and then work your way through back to the asteroid and eventually come to fight and actually work your way through the memories of and fight the adventure's big bad, Dr. Gregant, who is Basically, she started off wanting to do good. She wanted to eliminate pain in the universe because both her parents died horribly of horrible diseases. But she got hired by Eclipse to sort of like, well, let's make soldiers who don't feel pain. She has started cutting corners, starting doing unauthorized experiments, turning to the mystical thing, and then a massive accident sort of shunted her to the shadow plane, trapped her there, and kind of made her something that's not quite human anymore. And now she just wants to spread the gift of pain to the universe. Once the PCs have defeated her, they can make their way back to the material plane, purge themselves of the corruption that has been festering in their souls, if they so wish, basically win the day, the end. Let's see here. Penumbra Protocol has a nice sort of gazetteer of the big metropolis Kuvakara that you're in, as well as an article about Velstrax, i.e. chitons, sort of how they function in the Starfinder universe. This one is got an article about the Shadow Plane, and of course our continuing campaign, plus lots of spooky monsters. That'll get you all the way through to February.
January,
yes.
Yes.
Up to the end of January.
February.
Yeah.
That takes you through January.
Through January, starting in February.
Yeah. Can I say one thing just about this? So Jason was saying that this is like it can be a sequel to Against the Aeon Throne because they start concurrent. But of course you can play it separately too. It's just it starts at seventh
it
level instead of at first level. But
again, an experiment that we're trying, and if it sounds like something you'd like, Venture Path starting at higher level, please go on our forums and make yourself heard so we can present this to our bosses and be like, hey, let's do a sixth volume one that starts at fourth level or something.
So in February, then, that takes us to the next AP, which we actually announced at PaizoCon in May, but we can give a little bit more information about. So, Chris, why don't you
And that's called Dawn of Flame. It's set in the Pact World Sun.
Literally in the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally in the sun.
Yeah.
it starts with... the first volume is called... Wait a minute. What is the first volume called?
Firestarters.
which the... There's a portal on the surface of the sun called Far Portal, and a starship comes through it for the first time ever in recorded history while your characters are on the Far Portal station, which is observing that portal. And you rescue the ship, and then you find out that there's some weird stuff going on with Plane of Fire, related to the Plane of Fire, on that starship, and you end up going to the Burning Archipelago on the surface of the sun, and while you're there, you're trying to research and figure out what's happening, and you end up getting caught in a coup in the Burning Archipelago city of Asana Town. And that is the leader of the coup, Zaylan Trinipal. And he is he's the cover figure for the first volume. And then the second volume is called Soldiers of Brass. The first one's by James L. Sutter. The second one is by Crystal Frazier. That's the background version. That's the background of the image for...
For the first one?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, oh yeah. See the Lashunta there.
Yeah, Asana Town is the sort of Lashunta enclave in the Burning Archipelago, so it's a bunch of Lashunta live there. And
yeah, and the volume has a gazetteer of Asana Town. And then the second volume is called Soldiers of Brass. You get a little deeper into the plot, and you are working for an organization called the Deep Cultures Institute, a representative of which you rescued in Asana Town in the first volume. The second volume starts out with this mysterious museum heist.
I'm sorry. The Burning Archipelago, is that on the Plane of Fire or on the sun?
The Burning Archipelago is on the surface of the sun.
Okay.
So it's a city on the surface of the sun. It has mysterious origins. The followers of Saren Rae found it and settled it. And in Soldiers of Brass, you stop this mysterious museum heist where these Ikeshti are robbing the DCI museum, and it turns out that they're working for somebody, and you pursue the information that they stole from the Deep Cultures Institute to a band of mercenaries that you actually encountered members of in the first volume. And it was mysterious as to why they were working with the Lashunta in this coup. And some of the pieces come together in this volume, and you face their leader, which is this woman, Commander Maiji Jalusan, who is an Ifrit. But also,
are there going to be will players be able to play Ifrits once they get this volume?
Yes.
You better believe it.
They'll actually be able to play Ifrits in the first volume.
Fair enough.
They'll be able to play Sulis in this volume. When you recover the information from her, you discover that they actually had a lot of information that was related to what was stolen and had cross-referenced it. So they located a place inside the sun that you can then go to. The problem is that at the beginning of the third adventure, which is called Sun Divers by Joe Pacini, you don't have any way to get into the sun. There's no vessel to get that exists that can get you into the sun. But you learn that a crazy member of a group called the Corona Sun Divers.
The Corona Divers.
Honor Fact Divers. Yeah. That's right. Has invented experimental technology to do just that. Unfortunately, this person has a gambling problem, and a cartel has confiscated his vessel. So you have to figure out a way to recover that vessel from the cartel in the bubble city of Verdion on the Burning Archipelago. Now, once you do, you can go to this place called Noma that you located using the data from Volume 2. And Noma is kind of this mysterious place that has Anasite analogs. Anasites are the machine inhabitants of the planet of Avalon in the Pact Worlds, and they're sentient AI robots. But Noma has these analogs of Anasites, but it's unclear whether Noma is related to the Anasites in the first ones. Noma seems to be in an experimental place where this AI is performing various thought projects and building them structurally in kind of a weird bubble. And you get to explore that, but when you get there, you find that the forces of the Plane of Fire have already been there and have been doing something and riling up the Anasites. And you find a lot of unusual things, including the clue to the next place. So you go into this weird temple where a lot of this stuff is originating, and you find kind of a weird tablet with indecipherable writing on it. And it's in a place that the forces of the Plane of Fire already looted, but they left this behind because they didn't realize its value. And when you take it just as they return, going, oh, we left something behind. And that's the big bad of the third adventure, which is a salamander named Sulfrax. And when you get this tablet, you take it, since it's indecipherable, you take it back to the Deep Cultures Institute, and they start working on it. And that leads to the fourth volume, which is called The Blind City. And it turns out that this tablet piques the interest of some followers of the Elder Gods. And they want it, so they try to take it from the DCI. And so you have to face a bunch of weird cultists who are trying to not only get the tablet, but kidnap people who know how to decipher it and stuff like that. And once you get it back and make sure that you have it, it leads you to discover another bubble even deeper in the sun called Ezerod, which is, from the outside, looks like just a black pearl. And on the inside, it is a weird kind of dungeonscape that is ultimately a prison for an elder being that is the enemy of the elder gods.
When you say elder gods, are you talking Cthulhu and Yog-Sothoth?
Yeah, it's like
the elder mythos.
Elder mythos as relates to Pathfinder and Starfinder.
And Starfinder, particularly, there's Yog-Sothoth we talk about, and Nyarlathotep is actually one of the core 20 gods of Starfinder. So there's, it's the Cthulhu-esque type type stuff, yeah.
And in this case, you face cultists of Azathoth who think that this tablet has something to do with Azathoth. And it does, sort of, in that the ultimate... And the entity that's imprisoned in this bubble is the enemy of Azathoth, and he was involved in the imprisonment of this creature. So, but ultimately, you find some technology within Ezerod that allows you to go even deeper into the sun. But when in removing it from Ezerod, you destroy it. Whether that releases the imprisoned enemy or the imprisoned entity, or just destroys it because it's released into the sun, who knows? But as that happens and you're escaping, the whole time, those of you who know about the Pact World Sun know that, and Asana Town know that the Lashunta in the Burning Archipelago have been receiving this telepathic signal from within the sun that has been just, it's like a signal of impending doom, but it's to them it's constant. It's like a constant headache or something that's constantly nagging at them. And one of the reasons that the coup occurs in the first adventure is because when the far portal falls into the sun, there's a telepathic burst from within the sun, and that kind of is the breaking point for the Lashunta, and they take matters into their own hands. But a similar thing happens when you destroy Ezerod, and that is that the signal becomes clearer, and you are able to locate its source, but you don't have enough fuel to go there, so you have to go back to the surface and then prepare your ship to go even deeper into the sun, to a place called Kalanal, which is a city, an actual city in the sun with an alien species called the Anasanoi. And it turns out that an Afridi army has invaded Kalanal, and they're signaling for help, and the signal that has been bothering the Lashunta the whole time was their warnings that they could see the Afridi like scouting around in the sun and doing all these various things, and they said, well, the Afrit are bad. Them scouting around in the sun and doing all this stuff can't be good, so we're going to send the signal, and hopefully somebody that isn't a peace-loving species such as ourselves will receive it and come do something about it. Well, you do, but right after the Afrit go, oh, look at those guys. They're sending this telepathic signal. We should probably stop that. And they invade. And then when you get to Kalanal, you basically work to oust the army, the invading forces, the beachhead of the Afridi army, and which is led by a solar dragon.
Gotta have a dragon.
And that volume is called Solar Strike. And it's by Mark Moreland. And then after you oust the army from Kalanal, you find where their headquarters are, because it's a military operation, so they have a connection to that. And that is a structure even deeper in the sun, which is in a Afridi stronghold called the Crucible. So the final volume by Jason Tondro is called Assault on the Crucible. So as you oust the Afridi army from Kalanal, the Afrit find out about it, kind of, and they move up their timetable, so they send their invasion force to take over the Burning Archipelago. And you're the only one, your characters are the only ones that can get to the Crucible quickly enough to have any effect on whether that command center can lead the war from there. So you go there, and you quickly try to disable the things that it's capable of. And ultimately, that draws the big bad guy back to the Crucible. Should I say who the big bad guy is?
Sure, why not?
His name is General Kaim. He's an Afridi noble, and he serves a mysterious entity from the Plane of Fire called the Malika. And the Malika is a demigod, I guess you could say. Virtually a demigod. Her aim is to become a god, and that's one of the reasons why she's trying to take over the sun. And I forget the name of her, Regathiel. Her brother's name is
Regathiel. Oh, yeah, her half-brother Regathiel,
the Empyrean Lord.
Imperial Lord.
And so ultimately, as you dismantle parts of the Crucible and threaten General Kayim's ultimate plan, he uses his teleportation powers to come back and squash him.
Or not.
The PCs win.
Or the PCs win.
Exactly.
And one of the ways you can win is that he is using the Stellar Cauldron of a group of void hags to distill his own wishes and elevate his power. And of course, they're evil, and so they have a side operation with those wishes, and if you can kind of manipulate them, you might be able to gain them as allies against the general in the end.
Cool.
All right, yeah, so that takes us through July of next year, and
and 13th level, so it's 1st through 13th level.
Yeah. And that's what we've got on the slate. We'll have another one. We haven't announced it yet, but we'll have another one following that, but we still have these three adventure paths to go, so that's what we're focusing on right now. And I guess we can open up to questions now about anything.
The fourth one is called...
Anybody have any questions about any of the APs or our process or Starfinder in general? Yeah.
So I heard Event Horizon in there, but what were the other influences on Signals of Screams?
So the question is, what are the other influences of Signals of Screams? Hellraiser is a not so much Hellraiser in space, but generally the whole the fact that Pathfinders, Chitons, now called Velstrax, are sort of analogs to the Cenobites. Basically, that's sort of what this whole pleasure and pain sort of being intermingled stuff. Kuvakar is kind of Dark City. Yeah.
Well, I could say that from my volume, a lot of 80s and 90s horror movies have little Easter eggs in there. And movies like Oculus.
Perceptions.
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. There's a lot of the stuff in the first volume where PCs might not be able to trust their senses. Anything kind of space horror and spooky has a big influence on it. Cool. Any other questions?
Yeah.
You guys looking to do anything similar to Kingmaker in space?
The question is, are we looking to do anything similar to Kingmaker? I think that would be a really fun thing. We don't have any hard-coded plans right now, but I could see it going two ways, either sort of exploring the galaxy and doing that, or possibly even like a colony world, like settling a colony and building the colony from scratch. We'd have to do our own sort of, campaign rules or exploration rules for that. So we haven't done that yet, but I think that's one. We have a big list of like AP ideas that we've kind of keep talking about and generating, and something like that's on there because Kingmaker was a lot of fun, and it would seem like it'd be a really cool thing to do in space too. Any more questions?
Rob and I are steeped in Starfinder. Star Frontiers.
Oh.
From when we were younger. So we've also talked about doing a planet exploration survey type AP, maybe.
Yeah.
It's on the list.
Definitely.
Has anybody here played any of Dead Sons yet? Or okay, so a few people. I can go. I went kind of quickly through that one because it's already out, and then I can go into a little more detail about that one. So the first adventure of Dead Sons, Incident at Absalom Station, how many people here will play Starfinder now, or do we have some new people in here? All right, so Absalom Station is kind of our beginning. Actually, do we have a question from Twitter?
Yes, from Undine asks,
Will there ever be an adventure set in the Zoe reality show? This is from our Starfinder Society. Zoe is an Eoxian. This is the planet of the undead, and so he's sort of this undead reality show host. I'm not sure if we'll do an adventure path because there is a Starfinder Society scenario.
Yeah.
It's our organized play program called...
It's called Live Exploration Extreme. I believe with an exclamation point. I'm not sure about that.
Or multiple exclamation points, maybe?
You have to pronounce the exclamation point because there's
Zoe
without an exclamation
point.
There's
Zoe.
Like city somewhere.
Yes, there's a city of Zoe on track.
Zoe has an exclamation point himself.
But Live Exploration Extreme, the title, I think, also has an exclamation point.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
That is a scenario written by John Compton He got to play that with that particular set of toys. I mean, they sort of wanted to have this reality show character, and we, you know, sort of put him in the pack, mentioned him in the pack world too. So it's definitely 100% canon. And you know, basically the Starfinders in that one get sort of like, we got this. If you've played Claim to Salvation, which is like I think 100, this weird moon called Salvation has a bunch of dungeons in it, and so Zoe, I guess, bought the rights to be able to explore those dungeons or something along those lines, and he basically is sort of funding the Starfinder Society to go in, but to do so, the Starfinders have to have cameras around them the whole time. So, and it's a pretty fun adventure, and it goes to some surprising places.
And my character is a hopeful.
Well, yes, the developer game. Chris's character is playing a Skittermander who is her own vid star on a smaller scale.
So we probably won't do an adventure path based with him because the Starfinder Society is probably going to be doing more stuff with that character and everything, and that's kind of linked together. So
depending on whatever themes might go for future adventure paths, Zoe could just make an appearance.
Sure,
but I wouldn't necessarily
say
he would be the focus.
So going back to Dead Sons, I can tell you a little bit about that. Absalom Station is this. In the core setting of Starfinder, if you're familiar with Pathfinder, you've got Galarian, and Absalom is the city at the center of the world. Well, in Starfinder, Galarian has vanished. The planet is no longer there. The gods say that it's okay, but no one will say what's happened to it. And in its orbit, where the planet was, is a space station called Absalom Station. That's kind of the center of humanity and the Pact Worlds, which is the alliance of the planets in the solar system, of what was Galarian's solar system. So the first adventure of Dead Sons starts off the characters arriving there. They're interested in joining the Starfinder Society, which is the space version of the Pathfinder Society, basically. And they basically get caught up into some gang warfare and then get called upon to investigate this strange ship that arrived that was towing this weird asteroid, and there was no contact from the ship. So they end up going there and fighting a bunch of monsters and everything. They find out that this asteroid that's behind it is actually part of some larger piece. And that gains the attention of two other factions that are kind of searching for what this ancient technology was. And one is the Corpse Fleet, which is, we've talked about Eox, this planet of the undead, who have joined the Pact Worlds. But when they first joined the Pact Worlds, a big portion of Eox's navy was like, no, we don't want to do that, and went off on their own, and they're called the Corpse Fleet now. And officially, there is no connection between the government of Eox and the Corpse Fleet, officially. But lots of people think there is. So that you have the Corpse Fleet and then the Cult of the Devourer, and the Devourer is one of the new gods in Starfinder that's just this cosmic force of entropy and, not even entropy, it's supernovas and black holes and basically everything that destroys everything in the universe. And so his cult wants to get a hold of this because you find out that this is actually some big super weapon or ancient super weapon built by an ancient civilization. So in the second adventure, the PCs go to Castrovel, which is the jungle planet, kind of like Venus, to track down some information on what this strange asteroid they found was. And they run into the Cult of the Devourer there, and they have to defeat them. From there, they go to Eox, the planet of the dead, because they're interested in the Corpse Fleet as well, and so they've got a deal. That's a really interesting thing because, particularly if you play like Pathfinder, lots of fantasy games, undead or evil, and they are the bad guys. But at least on Eox, these, even though they're undead, and many of them might be evil, not all of them are, and they're just as much citizens of the Pact World as anybody else. So it's kind of an interesting thing. There's undead shopkeepers and stuff like that that you have to meet and interact with. And finally from there, you learn about this previously undiscovered planet. So you go much farther out into the... That's in the vast, right?
Yeah.
And you find that this ancient civilization that created this super weapon, you find a small pocket of creatures that have basically descended from them. They're no longer quite as intelligent, and as they used to have this huge, you know, world-spanning empire, maybe. And these people kind of forgot, but through their superstitions and stories, you can learn more about this. This place called the Gate of the 12 Suns, which is this mega structure they built, this ancient race built, that consists of 12 suns that are arranged in this pattern. They actually did stellar engineering. And you go there, and you have to figure out how to work that out, and finally at the end, you have to defeat the Cult of the Devourer, and at the end, the Corpse Fleet shows up, and they're getting access to the, or they're trying to get access to the Stellar Degenerator, this big super weapon, and that's where the our big finale is. The PCs need to keep this weapon from falling into the hands of the bad guys because it's a giant super weapon that can destroy suns.
And
so
you stop it by taking over a super colossal capital ship.
Yeah.
And driving it into a planet or something.
Just smashing the two of them together.
Yeah, so it's got really big stakes, and it kind of takes you all over the galaxy and introduces a bunch of alien races and also gives a good introduction to the Pact Worlds, which is sort of the core setting of Starfinder.
And introduces super colossal ships.
And super colossal ships, yeah, which are bigger ships than what we have in the core rulebook. Kind of the brief on Dead Suns. Those are all of our adventure paths for right now. Any other questions? Anybody thought of it?
Was book one of Dead Suns supposed to be that deadly?
Yeah. I don't know. Rob wrote it.
Well, it's
the question was.
The question is, was the first adventure meant to be that deadly? What do you consider deadly about that adventure, out of curiosity?
I had one player who did not have to roll a figure.
Okay.
So what's the problem?
Oh, I don't see a problem there.
I have one player left.
It's interesting because Starfinder is actually, in some ways, a lot more survivable than Pathfinder because we have stamina points and hit points, and it's much easier to get stamina points back. My early adventures tend to be a little more difficult because I feel like it's good to inform the player characters that the galaxy is a dangerous place. I think one of the big things that came out in that one was the affliction rules, because there's a disease that you can get in that one that is very, and that is something that's, we were writing this when I was writing that one while we were still working on the rules for the game, because it came out at the same time, so we didn't have the final rules when I was writing it, and the Akatas who get that disease are actually a monster we ported over from Pathfinder, so it is difficult. We've gotten lots of varying reports. Some people say it's really difficult, and other people have had a cakewalk through it, or so they've claimed. So I think in some cases it might be the dice, but it might also be a little harder than other adventures too.
I'm also going to be honest, as a developer, when I've developed the final battle or some of the bigger battles in an adventure, I want to be like, I don't know if some people are going to survive this, but that's okay.
I think another thing too particularly with that adventure, because it was the first Starfinder adventure, is people that came from Pathfinder, combat does work very differently in Starfinder than in Pathfinder. It's the range nature of it. Like, everybody has a gun, and so if you can build a viable melee character, but it is dangerous to do that too, because you're kind of out in the open. And I think a lot of people came in there, and you kind of have to do a little shift and not play it quite the same way that you play Pathfinder, because that is kind of a good way to die. It's like seek cover and, you know, take your shots and all that. Cover is a really important thing to do in Starfinder.
So. Yeah, that's one of the things that even at my table people forget, is that you should be behind cover. Like, take cover, then shoot.
Right, yeah. Because Starfinder is based on the Pathfinder rules, but there's enough little changes that if you're not careful, you can either use a Pathfinder rule or do something the way you would do it in Pathfinder, when in Starfinder there's a different way to handle it there.
So when you get to Dawn of Flame, if you ask the same question, was it meant to be that deadly? Probably.
Any other questions here? No? Come on. How about you all? You got any questions?
Do I have any questions? Do I have any questions?
Yeah.
So I know you're waiting to see how the shorter adventure paths work out before think about planning another one. How long of feedback is that going to take? Are we talking about the next one after the one on Sun, or two after, or three after? How long?
It probably won't be the one right after that, because we're already working on Dawn of Flame, and Against Aeon Throne just comes out at the end of this month. And
right.
So it's probably... Probably it'll be a year or two, because we do work on these a bit far. It also depends on how much feedback we get too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of we do have to work on them. The production schedule is pretty deep.
Pretty far out.
So
it's a pretty cool way to tell a short story, though.
Yeah,
sure.
So,
yeah. Like, no, definitely no earlier than 2020.
Do any plans to do a module one for a third story?
We've talked about it. We still have a relatively small team on Starfinder, and so it's really just the capacity of what we can do to hit our schedule. It would be great to do some standalone adventures. We just need to kind of get to the point where we can do that. And I think doing these shorter adventure paths is one way to address that. So it's like, well, we don't want to go in for six full volumes. You know, three is maybe a better way, a shorter way to get some people in there. So, of course, there's also the Starfinder Society scenarios, which even if you're not playing in the organized play program, they're all PDFs. You can get them and you can just play them, you know, with your home group, either for credit or not. We're just doing it. The Starfinder team, we have a weekly game, and because we're not working directly on the scenarios, mostly we're playing through the Starfinder Society scenarios because it's just a fun, you know, those are fun short little adventures.
And some of them connect together to tell a slightly longer story, so you can always connect those up.
I understand Pathfinder has like the superstar thing where people submit like their own homegrown adventures and things. Is something for that? Is something like that similar plan for Starfinder?
So the question was the RPG Superstar contest that we had for Pathfinder, and are we going to do something like that for Starfinder? We haven't talked about that yet. Because we're still pretty new, and when RPG Superstar started, Pathfinder had been out for
5 years.
A few years at least. So, I think it actually started before Pathfinder came out. But
it did?
I don't remember. But we don't have any current plans right now. It's kind of even gone on hiatus in Pathfinder for right now. So it's kind of hard to manage and everything. It takes a lot of like internal resources, and then it means like it's harder to kind of put out. But It would be fun to do it at some point if we ever get around to it, I think.
But we're developers, so we're the guys to talk to if you want to write something for Starfinder.
There's also a panel Saturday for called Writing for Paizo.
It's on the schedule outside.
So come to that.
There's also a number of third-party publishers that are producing content for, and they're always looking for writers as well. So if you're actually interested, you know, see some of the, take a look at some of who else is putting out Starfinder material, and that's a good way to run into or get your foot in the door if you want to do some writing.
Cool.
Okay. Any last minute questions? We've got just a few minutes. Any burning questions? Yeah.
So Pathfinder APs tend to take up about 17 to 18 level. Was it a specific design choice for Starfinder to be 12 and 13 level progression over 6 levels?
So the question is, Pathfinder Adventure Pass usually go to about 17th level. Starfinder Adventures go to about 12th, or the Adventure Pass, was that planned? The real answer for that is the APs, the Starfinder Adventure Pass, are a little bit shorter. The entire book for Pathfinder, they're 96 pages. They're 64 pages for Starfinder. We still have articles and monsters in there, so it's really, the adventures are shorter, so in a six-volume format, you just can't get that far. And so it wasn't so much we don't want to do high-level adventures. It was the format of what we could do. And that's one of the reasons why with Signal of Screams, we're starting off at a higher level and just seeing how that goes, because then, you know, if it's not a turn-off to people that they can't just get a first-level adventure, then we could maybe start an adventure at 10th and go to 20th or something. So I'd like to be able to do that, because right now, we don't have a way to get up into the high levels of play yet in Starfinder.
So even if you don't, if space horror isn't your jam and you don't buy Signal Screams, I mean, I'll be heartbroken, but feel free to also say, like, seventh, you know, I want to see more stuff that starts at high level on the forums, even if you don't buy anything. We want to hear your voices.
And we do have some support in the form of the continuing the campaign for higher level stuff. Usually includes two higher level villains, along with a bunch of ideas for continuing the campaign related to the AP after the AP's over, so.
Okay, looks like we have another Twitter question.
From Strayu, now that the first AP is over with, are there any plans to change the format or the size of articles that comprise the makeup of each AP issue?
Okay, changing the format now that we have a full one. At this point, we don't have plans to change any of the format. We're always looking at it to see. The biggest change right now is these three-volume APs and the starting at a higher level, and we want to see how that goes. But the plan is still to have a couple of articles, a section of new monsters, a new planet, and a new starship in every volume of the AP.
Yeah. And then we can toy with a little bit individually volumes and say, like, oh, this adventure might need to run long, so this article only needs to be 6 pages instead of 8 pages. But for the most part, it's what you're used to.
Yeah. And okay, so one last question.
Is there a particular reason as to why Starfinder AP, each volume is 64 pages instead of 56?
It's the reason, the question is, what is the reason for the 64 pages versus the 96 page? The real reason is that we weren't sure how popular it was going to be, so we had at the beginning, and still a very small team, you know, we just released the Pathfinder 2 playtest, so most of the company has been really focused on that. And so it was like, well, we don't know how this new game is going to work out. That's why it was originally a bi-monthly release, too. And so that's the one big change, is like, okay, people want more adventures. We're going to do monthly now. But just in terms of the resources needed to do the larger page count, we just haven't been able to put that many resources to it yet.
And so, an important part of those resources is just people working on it, you know?
Right.
So
people like us who are, yeah.
Because, yeah, there's not enough of us to do.
We're still the new game at Paizo, so we have to, you know, like everybody, it's fun because we get to do a lot of new stuff right from the very beginning, but for the fans and stuff, they want more stuff, and we just can't do it as fast as people want it, so... yeah, but we definitely appreciate like everyone who's interested in the game and plays the game, and thank you so much for that. And I think that's where we'll do our panel too.
Thanks for coming out, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank
Adventures.
You.